Welcome to At a Crossroads with the Naked Podcaster, where we bear it all emotionally and spiritually. This podcast is designed to support and uplift you as a Christian. I'm your host, Jen Taylor from momof18.com. Each week on the podcast, I'll bring you an inspiring message to support you in designing and creating a vibrant, fulfilling life. Before we dive in, please visit all of the links in the communities as this is a live broadcast. Feel free to ask questions I can answer during the podcast. At Crossroads with the Naked Podcasters for Christians who know that there is more to life and that our true, authentic souls are built for greatness. You are built with strength and love that is meant to shine through during times of conflict and celebration. Welcome. Can't wait to bear it all with you. In my business as a coach for Christian women, I help them to step into who they are meant to be and be inspired by their purpose and God-given gifts. Follow the links to sign up for my free training on how you as a Christian can begin to design the life that's meant for you. Reach out to me at any time on momof18.com. Hello.
Howdy.
Today. Hello. I'm so excited to have Dave Nassani on again. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
You're always wonderful, and I'm always wonderful, and I follow you everywhere for like over a year. It's called cyber stalking, but you know.
Cyber stalking.
It's not creepy. If you're okay with it. So you're on, and I have, of course, in the show notes, I have the link to our first episode for people that want to go back. Jump in. I have your website up as a tab here on the computer. You do some really amazing things. So jump into the website. Caregiver Dave is who you're known as.
Caregiver Dave is who I am known as. I'm a little distracted at the moment because, I have a show right after this and my guest just says, I don't have the link. Well, I sent her the link. So let me just send her the link again.
These podcast hosts, they need to get it together.
I know. So how have you been doing before we begin with me?
Well,
you like the way I transition?
Yes, you transition that back to me to give yourself time. Yes, this is great. I'm doing great. There's been a lot of changes in everything. You and I are both speakers. Would you call yourself a coach? Is that accurate?
I am many things, and I am also a coach. Yes.
Yeah, I would have said that. And yeah, so I'm doing great. I think this pandemic's been difficult for all of us. I also thought it was filled with opportunities and connection, just in different ways. And so I actually am doing really well.
Me too. You know, it's almost like I feel guilty saying this, but I guess I should say it because I have to bear all on your show.
Yeah.
But it's like there was no pandemic for me personally because, you know, I have a gas station. I've had a gas station since 1979. Yep. And it provides my income for me. And so, you know, I'm not like the poor multitudes who lost their businesses. And there are many. I'm not like many more who have lived in an area where riots, you know, threw rocks through their windows and got killed or beat up or anything like that. And I thank God for that. I'm very sympathetic and compassionate toward those who have gone through all of that stuff. It's almost like I'm living on a different planet, and I don't know why. I mean, why am I so special? You know, why is God smiling on me? There are many other more worthy people for him to smile on. And so when I get to heaven, you know, I'm going to have a long conversation with God about why he does what he does, because it just doesn't seem fair, you know. But I trust him and I love him, and I know that he's got everything under control.
Yeah.
My puny little grain of a sand size brain compared to the universe. But like I said, I feel guilty because I know there's a lot of people that are hurting. Caregivers already were on the verge of, you know, having a nervous breakdown and having a, you know, burnout and this and that, and to throw that curveball of COVID toward them, I mean, it's just many have gone over the edge. You know, suicide rates are yes, high among everyone, but especially among caregivers. And the finances, you know, everyone's finances have been affected, but caregivers' finances were already affected before. And I don't know why this thing won't stay in my ear, but I hate these things. But What can I say? I feel your pain, as Bill Clinton used to say. I really do. I have a website and I have a Facebook page with 35,000 followers, and I hear the stories. And, you know, I'm supposed to be the professional. I'm supposed to be the coach. I'm supposed to always know what to say. But sometimes, God, I just don't know what to say to some of these people who are hurting. You know, as a psychologist, you have to train yourself to not look like you're shocked when somebody says something shocking, you know, but it's getting harder and harder to play my poker face that, oh, really? Yeah, you know, I've heard that before, and I've never heard it before. It's like devastating, and then I try to imagine how I would react to that. These people are handling things a lot better than I probably would, because, you know, maybe some people would say I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I wasn't. But, you know, I accepted God and Jesus into my life at an early age. I was 21. And so we met, my wife and I met, and we both kind of found him together, and we just lived our life according to his commandments. So, you know, I guess it's not shocking that if you do everything you're supposed to do, now it doesn't always happen this way, because I know a lot of people who are more holy than me who, you know, are struggling and are going through life, but maybe it's our response to the struggles.
Yeah.
Maybe it's how we view them. Maybe the glass is half full. Maybe when we see trials, maybe the Bible is true. It says, consider it joy when you see trials, you know, because it's an opportunity. And we've certainly had our share of trials and troubles, and I could match anybody on my Facebook page with trouble and trials. I mean, I lost my fortune in 2008. My home was in foreclosure. I was almost lost my business, almost went bankrupt. Keyword is almost. I should have. I don't know why I didn't. It was just God's grace. Maybe I reacted to those terrible things positively and say, you know what? God's never let me down. I'm going to get through this. Somehow I don't see any solution on the horizon, but He's the God, the miracle-working God, and I didn't plan on this podcast to be a yay God podcast, but I mean, this is who I am, and this is what I owe everything to when you ask me how I'm doing as a caregiver. Maybe if all my other caregivers had a stronger faith in God. Now, I'm not accusing them of not, because maybe there's someone out there who's a, you know, a saint, and things are still happening. There's no guarantees in life, is all I'm saying. And the only thing I can say is that I check my attitude. I check my motives. I don't know what else to say.
100%. And our trials aren't the same as someone else's. So I think it's really, you know, I was going to ask you about the gas station, because lots of things have changed. The price of oil. So I'm in Reno, Nevada, and our gas is over $4 a gallon. You know, I mean, I know that may have changed, but that's still going fine. That's good.
Yeah, because I'm in a good location. I'm on the highway. I'm in a resort area. I'm on Interstate 5, which connects Canada to Mexico, basically nonstop. And people are traveling, even if they're not supposed to travel, they're traveling, you know. And I went through 2 months early in 2000, I think it was April and May, that my volume actually went down to 50%. And normally, you know, that's concerning. However, something unusual happened also, and thank you, God. That's when Russia and Saudi Arabia were fighting over the price of oil, and oil just got down really, really low. It actually had a negative value at one point, which means our prices were going down and down and down and down. But an amazing thing happened. None of my competitors lowered their price. They always lower their price when, because that's what they are. They're competition. They're pushing the price down and cutthroat, but nobody did that. And it was a miracle. And so even though my volume was half as much, my margins doubled. Yeah. So everything was normal. And then Mother's Day came and people started traveling again. And then Easter came and summer came. And so I really have been unaffected, and I'm really blessed. But I know there's a lot of caregivers out there who are not. But you know, the gas crisis, let's call it that, because yeah. there's an election and all of a sudden, you know, the pipeline has been stopped and the federal lands that oil companies have the right to drill on have been stopped. And so, mm-hmm. you know, the new administration is doing a whole bunch of stuff to almost make us dependent on foreign oil, whereas yeah. the previous president made us independent. Now, I don't know what your politics is, but, you know, when you don't have to rely on expensive Arab countries to buy your oil, I mean, that's a good thing.
It and is.
I don't care about Democrat or Republican. I just care about common sense. Hello. And so it's been known now that I've had a gas station for since 1979. And so I've become the gasoline expert. I own gasolineexpert.com. And all of a sudden, nice. Nobody wanted to talk about caregiving on the 35 TV interviews that I've done on network from Hawaii to Washington, D.C., but they did want to talk about gas. So I've done 17 more wow. gasoline interviews. And so that I'm up to 49 now, if you combine the two. And I basically talk about, don't be a chump at the pump. 5 mistakes motorists can avoid when they fill her up. You know,
okay.
mistake number one, should I use regular or premium? You know, and it goes on and on. You know, should I check my oil and how often? How about the tires? You know, how about those yellow lights on the dashboard?
I'll ignore it's just, those. It's, ignore them.
Yeah, we have a word for people like you in the gasoline business. That's why they call them idiot lights. So don't be one if you're only checking your oil when that light comes on.
No,
but
I am.
But
I am
it's
good
a cute
at that.
Segment, and they love it. And everybody talks about gas. I get to talk about my gas station, and how long I've been there, and you know.
I had no idea it was such a big thing. When I yeah. was just kind of touching base on things that we had discussed, and you brought it up before I could that. Your income didn't change significantly. Also, for as far as caretaking, your wife is somewhat independent. She has a level of independence.
Thanks to my occupational therapy
yes.
advice that I got, he said, make her do everything. Don't come to her rescue. You know, if she's yep. reaching for something high, don't say, oh, I'll get it. I say, no, come on, step on your toes. You're almost there. You know, and I'm pushing her up and so, yeah, I could have created an invalid, but instead I created yeah. a very independent, in fact, too independent. I should have backed off a little. But she's like a Martha woman, Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman, all rolled up into one. She always has been, a type personality, a terrier decorator, gourmet cook, dinner parties,
yeah.
Wedding coordinator. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. She's making Barbie dolls now and making them look like amazing dress designers and this and that. And I mean, she still can't talk, but she can communicate
right.
non-verbally through Pictionary and charades. 2 games I hate, by the way. But
you
I'm
don't
learning.
Like, you don't like. I remember.
And she still can't walk, but she has a $10,000 power chair that goes on sand and gravel. And we've traveled the world in this chair. And
right.
so, you know, she's living the good life. She just decided one day, because she was depressed for 2.5 years and taking it all out on me. And anger was her favorite grief emotion. And, you know, I didn't know if I could take it anymore. I actually had to sit down and write her a letter. I said, Charlene, why are you so mean to me? I mean, I know it's hard on you, but you're making it even harder on me to care for you. I just don't think I can be with you anymore. I mean, I'll take care of you financially, but I just can't be with you. And, you know, right. I looked at that letter, Jen, and I read it over and over and over again. And I says, how can I give this to the mother of my children, to my soulmate, to the woman I married 21 years earlier? I couldn't do it. So I put it right here in this filing cabinet where it remains today. And just I found a caregiver support group because I found something in my pocket. It invited me to a caregiver support group. I didn't even know what a caregiver was, let alone a support group. But yet I figured if somebody gave this to me, maybe I should go. And so I went and everything changed for me. I met people there just like me, burned out caregivers. And I learned that if I didn't put my oxygen mask on first, I couldn't help Charlene. So I just started implementing all of that. It felt very selfish, but I says, well, I have permission. They said I should do this. I'm just going to do it, even though it doesn't feel right. And slowly but surely, she came around and she started becoming her old self again. And she saw that I was having fun and she was miserable. And, you know, misery loves company. But I guess she was tired of being miserable. And it took a couple of years to come to that realization. She says, if I'm still alive, maybe God still has a purpose for me. So she started decorating the new house that I had moved her to because
reluctantly,
kicking and screaming. And she just slowly started putting her life back together. She wanted to entertain people, put on this huge dinner party with one arm and one leg tied behind her back and duct tape over her mouth, basically.
Yeah.
But I can't stop her now. She's like conquering the world. And she's an encouragement to anybody who knows her. I can't complain about the pain in my foot or something. She looks at me like, oh, yeah, I try walking 24 hours in my shoes or my body, you know. So we've she's been on TV a few times, too. And she's just amazing. What can I say? This is the Charlene, amazing Charlene show.
I love how forward up front you are about the fact that, you know, she had the stroke and it's been two decades since that happened, right? It's been 25 over
25 years. It happened in 1996.
So you've been married longer since the stroke than
before
the stroke.
Yeah, we've been together like 47 years. It was half and half, but now, we've been married more stroke than normal, you know.
Right. And you've been very upfront about the fact that you really were grieving that first couple of years, as that makes complete sense, this woman that you lost.
Well, like you, I bear it all. I mean, that's just my nature. Unfiltered. Sometimes it gets me in trouble.
Too much. Yeah, me too. That's okay. It's who we are.
To know me is to love me. If you don't know me, I don't know. I might have some enemies out there, but probably I can count them on one hand. And I don't know why they don't like me, but... probably misperception, or they see what I do as egotistical or bragging or whatever, but I'm just being honest, you know.
Well, you took a situation where you were really grieving. And one thing I love that you point out is that you and your wife had to fall in love with each other all over again in very different circumstances, which
I'm married to a different woman, you know, she's not the same woman.
Right. And that you took that overwhelm and you found a caregiving group and you completely turned it around so much that that has become kind of your life's mission, is to help people. And you talk about how you are you still riding your bike every day?
I'm swimming. That counts, right?
Okay. Yeah. You're still doing something for yourself, which is
absolutely.
See, you know, I work with Christian women and moms, and it's the same thing. That oxygen, it's the same thing. Yeah. That
it's too hot to ride my bike right now in Southern California, as you know.
Yeah. It's
but I can swim in my pool, which I don't even need it heated. But yes, I'm constantly. Right. I have a personal trainer. I've had a personal trainer for 4 years because I had back problems. I needed back surgery, and I believe God healed me. And so I got an MRI. I was scheduled for surgery, and he says, "Wow, you don't need back surgery. Your 8 millimeter bulge shrunk down to 4 millimeters. Just join a gym." And so I did, and I got a trainer, and so he works me out hard, and I'm building muscle, and I'm getting tan, swimming, and life is good. What can I say?
Right. That is good. I do love though how much you help. So I wanted to talk about one thing, because my grandmother is 93.
Oh God.
And yeah, she's wonderful. And she was the person who put herself into independent living before she really needed it.
Smart lady.
Because she went through it with her mother, my great grandmother, who was kicking and screaming. Right. And she didn't want to be a burden. And this was interesting. She got really sick last summer during COVID. And the hospital policy is that I could have flown from Nevada to New Hampshire. And as long as I was wearing a mask, I could have been in the hospital room with her all day, every day.
Really?
So I was trying to fly to her while she was still in the hospital. I didn't manage to do that because once she got back into independent living, they wouldn't allow anyone in. Really? So the hospital was less extreme. Yeah. And nobody has been able to see her until like this last month because they were so afraid about being a high risk demographic and having anything brought in and the lawsuits, just the whole thing that could happen from there, right? That they allowed nothing. They've completely shut down. And it's been really hard for the people who are in the independent living, the people who need caregivers, right? Have been cut off. Do you know statistically the suicide rates before and now in the pandemic, how much they've risen?
I don't. And statistics are misleading anyway. I mean,
they are.
They say that statistics on anything with caregivers. I mean, they say that there are 60 million caregivers. Some say 40 million. Some say 50 million. I think there's more like 100 million because, which is, you know, over a third of the population, because there are caregivers out there who don't even know they're caregivers. You know, there's the guy who's neighbor to the old guy next door, and he sees him struggling and bending over, picking up his, oh, let me get that for you. And he brings it in, and then he sees him struggling with something. Oh, let me get that for you, you know. And then next thing you know, he's doing shopping for him. Next thing you know, he's taking him to doctor appointments. Next thing you know, when did this happen? I'm a caregiver, you know, or a sick dog or a cat. I mean, those aren't reported. How about the children under 18, supposedly 6 million of them who don't go to school because their mother says, no school today. You got to watch grandma. There's nobody else. We got to go to work. And they're not protected by labor laws. They get no lunch breaks. They get no 10-minute breaks. They get no pay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we don't give ourselves enough credit sometimes for what we are doing to help. Tell me about the stories that are changing. So you're 35,000. You have the radio show still? That's still going.
I've got three radio shows, actually.
Because who needs one when you can have three?
Well, yeah, that's what I say. Yeah. And I didn't plan on that. It just happened. And, you know, I don't know where that's going to go, but maybe there'll be four. I know where I'm getting the time. But you and I spoke about, you know, we have the same problems with growing and expanding and having too many guests. Before, I didn't have enough guests. Now I have too many guests.
Oh, my gosh.
So I've just went to the National Publicity Summit in New York. I picked up 40 more guests who want to be on my show. And so I've decided that I'm just going to do one show with two guests, 30 minutes and 30 minutes instead of an hour. And kind of because, you know, I've got guests booked into December, and it's not fair to book them, and they got to wait till December. So I'm just kind of working with that. So I got a lot of people I got to call back.
It's a good problem to have, that, you know, this popularity thing or whatever you want to call it when people want to get on your show. And it's really hard to navigate that. So I don't know that my answer is going to be four shows, but that's a different story.
It's not something that I'm thinking. So the first show is the one I've always done for like 8 years. It's the Caregiver Dave Show. And it's a podcast on like 26, 27 platforms. And then I do a monthly syndicated radio show heard in 150 all 50 states, 135 countries. Then with the Neil Haley syndicated radio show, I'm co-hosting with him. I do celebrity caregivers. So he does a show where he just interviews celebrities. And so he'll pick the ones out that he thinks is a good fit. And almost every single one of the celebrities that I help him interview has a caregiver story. I save the caregiver question toward the end. And so that's going to be my fifth book when I'm finished writing my fourth book, is Celebrity Caregivers. And I'm just going to take the audio transcripts of the shows. I've been doing that for 3 years. So there's a lot of shows, probably 150 shows so far. And so that's the third show. So like I said, they just kind of came on me. So
I love that, actually. And I would have to retract. I would definitely do four shows a week, depending on what they were and how they were structured and who was involved.
Once a month. That's not a big load, but it's a show.
It's not. Tell me about the stories that are changing within your group, within caregiving. How have they been changing over this last year plus?
It's just the same old stories, but more of the same. The same old stories that are just heightened. The drama gets a little worse. Obviously, the nursing homes and the independent facilities and the assisted living, all of that has been affected. And many have died. And as you know, there have been a handful of governors who have I won't use the adjective I want to use, but have placed sick people into nursing homes. And, you know, when they get 40%, you know, have died. And, well, that number was so high because a few people did some stupid things. And some people say they did it on purpose. Some people said they did it on accident. Some people said they were just stupid. Maybe all of the above. I don't know. But it's hard to relate to them because a lot of them, you know, not all 45,000 or 35,000 interact with us. Many of them are quiet. But every now and then, I'll post something like a meme. For example, a koala bear that says, my mother has been sick with dementia for 4 years. It's just an example. I just wish she'd die, you know, just like, oh my God. And a post like that, people will come out of the woodwork who have never, you know, responded at all. And I mean, there's just tens of thousands who are responding to a post like that when only just a few hundred would normally respond, and sometimes just a few dozen. So you got to find the nerve and strike the nerve just to get them to talk, you know, get them to be more involved, because caregivers don't like to ask for help. They like to isolate themselves, and they just like to be miserable by themselves, you know, just sulk and be depressed and what have you. But many of them, I'd say 75% of them are causing their own problems, are causing their own grief, are causing their own misery. It's like they're torturing themselves because they don't have to do that, but it's a mindset. But normal people do that anyway. So I try to get normal people. I say, if you're not a caregiver, just wait. You're either going to become one, or you're going to need one. So now's the time to learn how to be a caregiver. You're going to have the same problems when you're a caregiver that you have now. Make sense?
Yeah. And I mean, like I've been following your page and stuff. So I know I know. 35,000.
You never know who's listening, you know?
Right. And you know, what's interesting. I'm pretty sure I've never commented. I've been on one of your podcasts about caregiving. And it is interesting how you strike the nerve to bring them out and then try to get them help. So what is this self-imposed? Is it a pity party? Is it like, why? Why would you do that when it's possible to not cause yourself your own stress?
Well, because it feels good to be miserable. I mean, that's a contradiction. It's an oxymoron. But think about it. When you got dumped by your boyfriend or something, all you wanted to do, you didn't want to do all the right stuff, like pick yourself up and, you know, go out and talk to positive people, surround yourself with positive people. You wanted to just sulk. You wanted to stay under the covers. You wanted to eat a gallon of ice cream. You wanted to do all the things that were bad because it felt good. And a lot of people just have created a prison around themselves. They don't see any way out, not in the natural. I mean, I didn't see any way out when I was losing my fortune, but you know, you have to have faith. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the confidence of things not seen. It's believing in the impossible. And the last thing someone who's miserable and grieving and depressed wants to do is believe in the impossible. It feels good eating that ice cream. It feels good staying under the covers. It feels good unplugging your phone, not wanting to talk to anybody. So that's why they do it, because it's like a drug. You know, why do people take drugs?
Right.
It's their drug.
And one of your posts, someone says, God's probably keeping your parents here to teach you humility and patience. Like, you know, in
that's
the whole
tough love. And many people don't respond to that. That's how I create enemies. You know, I mean, I try to not create enemies. I try to really be sensitive and compassionate. But a lot of these people don't need compassion. They need a kick in the rear end, you know?
Right.
They need that moment when Cher in the movie Moonstruck just slapped her boyfriend. He says, boom, snap out of it. You know, that's what they need.
Right. I agree. You know, okay. Well, I think it's interesting when you read through the comments of people caregiving, and in any, I guess, demographic, like you said, a boyfriend, a breakup, you can fall into the same trap. Caregiving, though, you're not getting over it necessarily. It's just never ending until it ends. And ending it is usually death or independent living or something like that.
And some of these sick loved ones just keep living on and on and on.
So
when a koala bear says, I just wish she'd die. I mean, my mother had dementia and I wished she would die. Not because I didn't love her, not because I wouldn't miss her, but because she was miserable and she wanted to die. And if I was her, I would want to die, because we know what's on the other side. She had faith. And my mother-in-law was a different kind of dementia. My mother was very cuddly. My mother-in-law acted like a witch. I mean, everyone was out to get her, and I was trying to steal her house. And so I really wish that she would die because she was torturing herself. And that sounds heartless. Right. And so on a post like that, maybe 60% of the people get it. And they say, yeah, mm-hmm. I know it sounds harsh, but blah, blah, blah. And the other 40%, they just judge us.
Well, that's more fun. Sometimes
harshly.
Right. When you're miserable and
you're never there, you never felt that. Be honest. Maybe they're not being honest.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And like you said, misery loves company. So now they get to judge you and be angry at that. They have a direction.
And they can feel good judging because now they're so focused.
Tell me about falling in love with your wife again. I know it's been 25 years. I know it's something you've talked about a lot. And her falling in love with you. I know that she communicates through two games you don't like. What did that look and feel like, though? Because you did have to make a decision at some point that, yes, you were staying and no, you weren't going to do it miserable. And you had to teach tough love. You had to do that, which was really... I know that that's tough, and I did it myself with my autistic son. And also, you know, that you have to do it, you have to be tough, and you have to honor yourself. You have to set boundaries, too. So what did it look like falling in love with her again? And from her perspective, as much as you know, too.
Well, first of all, I have the personality and temperament, which it's easy for me to do the tough love thing. You know, okay. I'm not the most sensitive person in the world, but I try. Yeah, but I really, really have to try to be sensitive because I guess naturally I can easily be insensitive and tough love. And that just comes easy for me, but not for everybody.
Right.
And so I got to have to watch myself. If something seems too easy, I've got to, you know, say, well, maybe that's too much. I don't know. But it was easy for me to dispense tough love to my wife. Because even when she didn't respond, I mean, she would have a temper tantrum and kick and scream. And I mean, scream at the top of her lungs. The neighbors probably thought I was strangling her. And, you know, she would just go to her room and sulk for 2 days. And I would let her do it. You know, many people couldn't do that. They would feel so guilty. They'd go in there, please forgive me. Well, I really didn't do anything to be forgiven about. But, you know, I did the tough love thing until I saw that it was working, that she was responding. Because, you know, we had to move from this huge, huge two-story house, which was impractical anymore. And I was commuting, you know, 35 minutes to work for 19 years, and I was in debt. And I says, you know what, I've got to downsize. Either the gas station is suffering or you're suffering, you know, you're more important, so I have to move there. She resisted moving for all those years because, you know, the gas station is in this rural area, and she thinks only hicks live there, and dirt roads and this and that. It has since developed. It's the third largest city in California now, Santa Clarita. But we live in a little suburb of Santa Clarita called Castaic, which is still very small. But anyway, I got to a point, and her mother was living with us at the time, and she was no ally. I mean, she was the one who's, oh, here, let me get that for you. No, 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 she can do it herself. And she was saying, don't do this. You're going to give her another stroke. And I says, so if she has another stroke, she has another stroke. But this needs to be done. We need to move. Finances, we're going to go under. We need to downsize and this and that. So she was not helping.
Right.
So in spite of all of that, you know, I'm like swimming upstream. And I finally got to a point where I knew it had to be done. And so I had to do the ultimatum, you know. I said, listen, Charlene, I said, we are moving. Okay, it's not a choice anymore. We are moving. I am moving. I would love for you to move with me. But if you don't want to, that's fine. I am moving with or without you. And if you want, I will set you up in a tiny little apartment because she hates tiny little things. She wants big houses. She didn't want to move from her big house to a smaller house. But he says, I'll put you in a tiny little apartment next to your daughters, which you claim, you know, you want to be next to, who don't visit you as often as they should, you know. And if that's what you want, that's what I'll do. And my mind was made up, and I walked into another room. She sulked for 2 days and cried for 2 days. Her mother thought I was just the meanest person ever put on the face of the planet, which she never liked me anyway. So it was easy for her to say things like that not only to my face, but to others. But I knew right. what I had to do, and I had a strong will. And, you know, I chose my battles carefully. You know, that was a hill I was prepared to die on. And you have to decide which hill right. are you prepared to die on. Because many others, I said, you know, this isn't important enough. I'll let her have her way. So she comes back after 2 days and says, in her way, she communicated, okay, I'll go, but I'm picking out the house. Because I owned a rental out there that wasn't being rented right at the moment. And it was big. It was nice. But it was on a dirt road. And, you know, it's because I chose it. She didn't want it. You know, it's almost like if Trump says Oxy, whatever it is good, then it must be bad. You know, it's like I was the enemy.
Right.
And so I said to myself, well, this is huge for her. And if she's willing to move, which I never thought she would, okay, you can pick out the house. So we went house shopping and, you know, she's so picky about anything, you know. So finally we found, it was actually the first house we looked at.
Oh, wow.
Which was a miracle. It was a one story. It had this handicapped slope in the pool. The yard was gorgeous. It was half the size of our other house. But your question about falling in love again and what it looked like. She was a different person. I mean, the old Charlene was gone. Her personality was gone. Everything was gone. But I was married to this woman. And I took vows, and I took them very seriously. But, you know, if she was going to make my life miserable, I was prepared to separate, you know, regardless of my morals and religious beliefs and all that, because I don't believe anybody should be miserable and torture right. themselves. And when it wasn't necessary, all she had to do, I was being reasonable. She was not. And so, you know, I could separate logic and emotion. She was being emotional. I was being logical. And so I got to the point where I just said, you know what, I'm being the adult in the room. And if you want, I didn't say this, but I thought this, I could fall in love with you again, who you are, because, you know, we have a past and I don't know, you'd have to ask her how she handled that. But in essence, it was easy falling in love with her again, because she was just a different person, but she was the same person.
Yeah.
And her personality slowly started coming back. And, you know, a lot of people feel sorry for me. Oh, you poor guy, you're married to this wife. You know, I can't imagine if that was, you know, guys, I can't imagine if that happened to my wife, you know, what I would do and this and that, you know, and it's probably different in the bedroom. And, you know, they're just assuming all this stuff. And I just said, well, what do you mean? I'm happy. We've never been happier. We've never been more in love. And it's just a new normal. You know, it's not the same.
Right.
Every couple goes through transformations as they get older. You know, you can't do things you used to do. And you either, I mean, our dream was to fall in love and grow old together. And hello, this is kind of what we're doing. We're growing old together. And I'm not perfect. I mean, I have this cough in the morning that would scare, a cat. And, you know, I have aches and pains and arthritis, and you know, it's not fun getting old. But I'm 67, no. She's 77, and I think she's doing better than me. So
I didn't know you guys had an age difference. Not that that matters.
She always says she did that on purpose because she knows that men age faster than women, and this way we'd be even, and we're even.
My husband's 4 years younger, and I'm like, I should have gone 15 years younger. So let's talk about that. You just brought up the fact that you're aging together, which is true. What is a contingency plan? She's never had a second stroke.
No, and she should have, because 50% of all people that have a stroke have another stroke.
I know. I wasn't going to be rude about it. Like, I can't believe she hasn't.
Yeah, I can't either. It's been 27 years, whatever it's been. And she's as healthy as a horse. She just can't talk, and the right side of her body is paralyzed. And she breaks all the rules. I mean, she has her root beer float whenever she wants it, and she drinks one can of Diet Coke, maybe two sometimes, which, you know, kills brain cells and all that stuff with the aspartame or whatever it is. And she just is an independent woman. She says, hey, I've lived my life. Mm-hmm. It was a good life. And it's like the guy who dies of cigarettes when he was 35, when he had quit, you know, years earlier. And then the old geezer who's still smoking Camel non-filters when he's 90 and he's still alive and he's still,
I know,
you know. So she, death doesn't scare her. She mm-hmm. welcomes it, you know, and maybe even, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, teases it. Nah. You know, here I am, take me down. You know, she wanted to actually jump out of an airplane skydiving, but since she's since changed her mind because she figures maybe I won't die. Maybe I'll just hurt myself. I did it once. I was going to do it twice because you have to do it twice because the first time you're too nervous to enjoy it.
Okay. But
weather didn't cooperate a couple of different times. And so I considered, we were in Hawaii with the kids and they all agreed they're going to do it. And I said, great, I'll do it too. And then they all chickened out. And so,
So what does a contingency plan look like moving forward? I don't think 67 is old, but that's because I am turning 51.
Hey,
so
I used to be 51.
I get right. And I'm eventually going to be 67.
Nothing hurt at 51.
True. It doesn't. I feel great.
Yeah. Enjoy it.
I do 100%. So the fact remains though, that every day we're all getting older.
Yeah.
And how do you guys have that sort of figured out? Because she's already beaten so many odds. You're not the person that's like, oh, hopefully she'll just die soon. I mean, it's been 25 years.
No, I don't say that. I used to say that about myself when I was in so much pain with my back. And this, I used to tell kids, I'm on the fast track. You know, I'm just doing all the dangerous stuff. And if I go, I go because I don't care. But now I feel pretty good, you know. Nothing hurts except if I overdo things.
Right.
So I'm enjoying life. I don't want to die.
No.
My wife is enjoying life. She doesn't want to die. So what right. we used to go on cruises when we were younger and we used to see these old people with oxygen tanks. And it's just, let's not wait till we're that old before we vacation. So we vacationed a lot. You know, sometimes we had the money and sometimes we didn't have the money, but we did it anyway because we knew we were going to get old. And if we knew we were going to be on oxygen, it's better to maybe go in debt and go on that cruise, then wait till you're 95 and you had the money, but you weren't really enjoying it. And so right. we continued to vacation every year. You know, I've been traveling all over the country speaking, and she'll mm-hmm. come to the fun places with me, New York, you know, Hawaii, of course, and Florida. We have relatives in different towns. We're going to Nashville. My grandson's getting married. She's coming with me. I'm supposed to speak. We'll see if it happens because of COVID. I'm supposed to speak in London September 10th at the Royal Academy of Medicine and at the London Stock Exchange and meet Nigel Farage, you know, the Brexit guy. And she's in there a little nervous about that because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm forcing her to go. I says, listen, if I'm going to Europe, you are coming with me. I'm not leaving you home wondering if you're going to roll out of bed and there's no one to, because I like to have people stay with her when I'm away on short periods. But if you go into Europe, I mean, you might as well stay there 2 or 3 weeks.
Right.
So I'm hoping it kind of doesn't happen because I don't have a fully trained staff at the station. I lost some people, so I'm trying to get them up to speed. But if it happens, it happens. If it gets postponed, it's already been postponed once. So yeah, we travel all over the place. We have fun. Sometimes, you know, I'll encourage her strongly to do this and that. I said, come on, we're not getting any younger. We can still do it. We may not be able to do it next year. I might be dead next year, you know. You might be in a nursing home or something, God forbid.
So yeah, but you don't know. You have to.
You don't know.
So
you might have a stroke. Who knows?
I mean,
take care of me.
Right. And you have contingencies set up for both of you to be cared for if in the event of something else.
I got in my late 40s, early 50s, long-term care policy.
Yeah.
So it pays like $4,000 a day. So I can have, it's like $400,000 life of it. So it depends on, you know, you can find a nice facility that takes for like $3,500 a month. You can find a really, really nice place in Malibu or something overlooking the ocean for like $10,000 a month. So just, you know, choose your poison and how fast you want your money to go. Because I don't want to put the burden on my kids that's on me.
Right.
Even though I've told them ever since they were young and growing up, my three daughters, he says, one day you're going to have to change my diapers. So
I do too. I say the same thing.
I give you this money for your auto insurance.
Exactly. I say the same thing. Well, I mean, we set up a trust because I always felt like there's nothing health-wise wrong with us, but that doesn't mean that you're not going to die. You just don't know. And I think the paperwork side of it is something you have control over, and it's not morbid. You plan for the worst because eventually that will happen. And then you live your life not worrying about it. And I always felt like if my family has to deal with losing me, I don't want them to have to deal with probate and paperwork and all this other garbage on top of losing me or me being an accident. So I just think it makes sense to plan for that eventuality and then not have to worry about it at all and know that you've taken the burden off of everyone you care about. So I do joke about it.
To talk about it because they think they'll jinx it, you know? I mean, and all the famous people, you know, who don't have wills and stuff. But, you know, I have a living trust and I just believe that anything can happen. I mean, on August 31st, Saturday night, Charlene and I went to bed expecting to wake up in the morning, go to church. And I woke up and she woke up, but she lost her speech, became paralyzed on one side and had a stroke and went to the hospital and was never the same and couldn't walk anymore. And our lives were turned upside down. And then we went through a 2.5 year grieving period. And if somebody told me that 27 years later, I would still be dealing with the effects of this, I don't know what I would have done. I'm glad nobody told me that. I'm glad I was on a need to know basis. This woman came into our hospital room trying to push us to go to a stroke support group and a caregiver support group. And she had a speech impediment. She says, I am from the stroke support group and I want to encourage you. I mean, that's how she spoke. Right. And I said to myself, because she had a stroke, and I said, oh my God, I don't know what I would do if Charlene spoke like that and was that abnormal. It freaked me out. But you know, today I would give anything for Charlene to speak like that because she can't speak at all. You know what I mean? So be careful what you wish for.
No kidding. So you speak all over, and there are really common topics that you speak about. And I love the first one. I mean, I don't love it, but the first one is preventing your loved one's illness or disease from killing you. And I mean, I think people really need to understand that that's a real thing.
Yeah. 30% of caregivers, this hard, cold statistic, actually die before their loved ones do.
Right.
And so that's just from the stress, from burning out because they're not taking care of themselves. You know, I've got this CARE formula, C-A-R-E, communicate with your friends. Don't isolate yourself. You know, don't rag on the friends that you used to go to the gym with or you used to go to the movies with or you used to get your nails done with. Otherwise, they won't come around anymore. They won't call anymore. Nobody wants to be around a Debbie Downer. Save the ragging for your support group because that's what they're there for. Let them rag on you. You rag on them. You both go home feeling better. A, right. Ask for help. Caregivers can't do it all by themselves. You know, it's like a 2-year-old. I want to do it myself. And, you know, they can't. If they do, they'll burn out. Ask for help. R, rest. Caregivers need 8 hours rest every single night, just like us normal people do. But the average caregiver only gets 2, maybe 3.
Oh, my gosh. How awful.
What if your loved one has to be turned over because of bed sores? That means they need 24/7 care and you can't provide it. They need to be in a facility. Oh no, they don't want to hear that, but they would rather slowly kill themselves. You know, the torture and death by 1,000 paper cuts, you know? And then finally, eat healthy, nutritious food. Don't eat junk food. Junk food's got chemicals, sugar, processed ingredients. All that stuff will kill you. And then, you know, there's the guilt, of course, being handcuffed to your loved one. Guilt is, you got to not feel guilty. You know, there's deserved guilt, there's undeserved guilt. If it's deserved guilt, then repent, apologize, turn yourself into the police, do whatever you have to do, and then throw the guilt away like it was a disposable diaper because it's not necessary anymore. It's designed to be a cop. Danger, Will Robinson. Are you doing something wrong? If you aren't, then fine, get rid of the guilt. But if you are, then deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I teach people that there's no reason to be guilty. And some people's mission in life is to make you feel guilty, like Jewish mothers, for example.
I'm from New England. You know? That's a real thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You finally pick up the phone to call your mother because you say, hey, you know, I haven't spoken to her in a week. And your mother answers the phone instead of saying, oh, I'm so glad you called. No, they say, what? You decided to pick up the phone? I could have been lying in my own urine for 7 days before you'd know I was dead. And, you know, as they can't win. That's no, why they can't. Don't call.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Tell me about the burnout quiz. That's something that's on your website. And then I want to kind of wrap up by just giving you've given a lot of advice, but your best advice for someone who's really struggling.
The best advice is, like I says, put your oxygen mask on first. You know, don't try to be Superman or Superwoman. Ask for help. And don't, so many people will come up and say, hey, you need any help? No, I'm good. I got it. You know, be specific. Don't just say, yeah, I could use some help. Call me sometime. They're not going to call. You got to say, well, are you free tomorrow? I need some lettuce. Can you stop at the grocery store, pick up some lettuce? No, you can't do it tomorrow. Well, how about the next day? No, you can't. Well, how about this Friday? In fact, I'll need cold cuts by then too. Don't let them off the hook. They offered to help. By golly, get the help out of them. You know?
Right.
Well, what was the other question you asked?
Oh, the burnout quiz. It's
just a simple little silly burnout quiz. It's 6 questions. I don't exactly remember what they are, but things like, you know, when is the last time you went to a movie with a friend and then it scores you? And when's the last time, you know, you thought about whatever, I can't even remember. And one of them is, are you always catching some sort of bug? You know, your immune system down. So little things like that. Then you add up the score. If you have too many points, says you're definitely burning out, you know, you need help, or you're very close to burning out, or, you know, not too bad, but, you know, this could turn in the other direction. You should start getting some help. It encourages them to join a support group and to just take care of themselves and put their needs first and to ask for help and do all the care formula things that I mentioned.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on again and giving us the update and being a positive light. I really appreciate you so much.
Great interviewer. You asked me all the right questions that hardly anybody else asks.
And yay!
You dig down deep and you pull out the gold nuggets that a lot of people are just too lazy to do. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to save this
for investing your time with me on At a Crossroads with the Naked Podcaster. I'm so glad that you joined our conversation. If you can take 2 minutes to share this episode with someone you think can benefit from it, or it would have a positive impact on their life, that would be amazing. Go to the podcast page to sign up for the free membership site where all guest links are available. This podcast is designed to help you in your struggles. So reach out and let me know what you enjoy or what you would like to see more of. It will support me on the journey of causing a worldwide epidemic of healing, gratitude, and joy. Until next time, remember you are not alone in your struggle. Reach out to me on any platform. I love to connect. You are worth it to me. Have an amazing day.